This is the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. Yara is the global leader in crop nutrition knowledge and the leading producer of quality fertilizer products. The podcast is intended to facilitate the transfer of knowledge for farmers and crop advisors, improving farm profitability and environmental sustainability. With Yara, knowledge grows.
Thanks for joining another edition of Yara's Crop Nutrition Podcast. In today's podcast, we're going to diverge a little bit from our normal format, and we're going to talk to Shay Myers, who is the general manager of Owyhee Produce out of Oregon. It is a third-generation family farm and one of the largest vertically integrated produce farms in the United States. We're going to talk to him about what it means to be a family farm in today's society, and especially now with this virus that we're all confronting. What risks does he see in the future and with the food chain? We talk about the safeguards that he has in place for his farm and other farms. What's the situation with the H-2A program, how this has affected the supply demand and other economics of the family farm. So please join as Shay Myers and our sales agronomist, Brady Stover from the Pacific Northwest, have a great conversation. So Shay, thank you for joining us. We appreciate you. He's sitting in his truck right now, just outside just on the farm. He's still working.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Glad you're here for a lot of reasons.
Thanks for having me. And because we need an expert, we have Brady Stover, who's one of our sales agronomists here at Yara. He's based up in the Pacific Northwest, and he's going to correct any of the bad information that I try to push on all you guys. You're the check for us, Brady.
That expert is very gracious. Thank you.
Hey, first and foremost, let's talk about this as are we at risk with our food production out there, Shay? Is there any risk of this virus being spread via our food system?
You know, No, in general terms, no. I mean, it's not any riskier than we would be on any other type of food recall, and it's probably even less so than that. I mean, we see how many food recalls there are. Let's look at, some of the salmonella challenges or E. coli challenges when it comes to leafy greens. And you're talking very limited numbers of people, very few times a year, if even on an annual basis. And those are usually bacterial issues and not viral problems. So the likelihood is extremely low. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
I read something last week from the U.S. Ag Secretary, who he told the House Agriculture Committee that COVID-19 is absolutely not transmittable through food. So let's put that to rest right now. We're not at risk if we're eating any of the food that we're buying at the grocery store, especially the fresh produce, which is where Shay's expertise is. Now let's just talk about farming in general. I know I'm here in California, and the state of California last night went into a shelter in place. A declaration, which means we need to basically stay in our houses except for non-essential duties. And if you go through the list, it says one of the essential things is farming. And so how is that affecting your operation, Shay, up there?
You know, at this point, I think that this will sound a little odd, but I think the biggest thing is a sense of pride in what we're doing. So often farmers are taken for granted and not appreciated. And all of a sudden when people go to the grocery store and there's not food on the shelf, they realize that the food doesn't come from that grocery store, that it actually has to come from somewhere. And I've had some very, very meaningful conversations with some of my employees on all levels about how important what they're doing is, and that they are always have that sense of pride about feeding people, but now it's that much more acute and it's that much more significant. So that part is really cool. The other part is just us trying to make sure that we're taking the steps to be safe, mm-hmm. Be safe as a workforce, be safe as a farm, and make sure that we stay healthy so that we can continue to ship and pack and grow the food like we need to.
You just released a video. You do a very good job out on social media, and I'll make sure I link the video to the show notes of this, of some of the steps that you guys take in your packing and production facilities as far as hygiene and contamination goes. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the steps that you take?
Sure. On a normal and a normal operation, some of our manufacturing processes or steps that we take is the stuff that they're talking about right now, like not daily hand washing, but often washing our hands in certain steps and orders that make sense. So if we're on the production floor, as we go to the production floor, we wash our hands, then we hand sanitize, and then we go onto the production floor and we do the work that we're going to do there. If we ever leave the production area or come in contact with something that's going to contaminate our hands or otherwise, we walk right into the hand washing station that's just inside the door by the break room, and we start that process over. And it's right now, it's really no different than what we would normally do. We are a little more conscientious, and the risk is a little bit more, seems a little more apparent and realistic. Sometimes we think of these germs and diseases and problems as the boogeyman, mm-hmm. and we never can see them. But right now we're feeling the effect. So it's been a good lesson to be learned as well.
I watched that video and I thought, boy, if I had some of those procedures in my own personal life, I think I'd be a healthier person, because
yeah, you
guys are really, taking care of the hygiene and washing hands. And I would think that that's really helped the overall health of your workforce too. Have you been affected at all by the disease?
There is some in the community. We have not in the packing facility. We haven't seen it at all, or on the farm for that matter. And I agree with you. I think the process is like the natural course of events, and what we're doing helps protect us. Also, living in rural America is a little bit easier. We're not on a crowded subway train or a busy elevator or cab or bus or whatever that might be. That helps to keep us a little bit isolated. The social distancing that's spoken of is kind of part of our daily life for the most part.
Has there been any regulations that have come down with disease to farms? Are there been any additional regulations or requirements?
So far, nothing. The only impact, and you may have seen that video the other day, is some of the challenges that looked like they were going to affect us with H2A and some of the crossings. Today was the closure of the non-essential people crossing either to Canada from Canada or from Mexico or to Mexico. And that could have had an impact, but that looks like it's been mitigated.
Brady, you had some questions about that, the H2A program, right?
Yeah, I was just aware of the uncertainty that was developing, and there was quite a few rumors going around of where it may go, of who would be essential and who was not essential. And then also, if they were not already a part of the program, would they be able to join? So just kind of what would happen if we didn't get those workers, or what we could do, sort of a call to action to help aid in making sure that the importance of getting those workers was spread.
Shay, are you worried about the workers? Do you have all your workers in place now, or do you expect to have additional workers come onto the farm? And are you worried that you're not going to be able to get those?
On Monday, we were very concerned. A letter was released saying that they were going to close the consulates, the U.S. consulates in Mexico, and we were very concerned. That has been relaxed some and changed some. And the risk is lower. I think the important thing for the general consumer to understand, and certainly this is not necessarily this audience, is to realize how important immigrant labor, at least currently, is to farming in general. Without, especially in the specialty crop sector, vegetables and row crop, we can't, or at least today, we have not mechanized or automated those processes. No matter, we would like to in a lot of ways, but we have not been able to. So any disruption in that, those people that are coming and available to work, will be felt very acutely and in a significant way.
How many people do you need for planting and then harvest? And I believe you've mentioned in the past you feed upwards of 7 million. What would be the ripple effect if you were to not get those H2A workers?
Yeah, so if we were not to get those H2A workers, I guess the question is what is our alternative? First of all, if we couldn't replace those workers, which in the present job market, they are not replaceable. At 3% unemployment, they are not replaceable. So let's make that assumption, right? That's important. If they aren't replaced and we don't have those people, asparagus harvest for us starts anytime now. That crop either doesn't get harvested, or at least a significant portion of it does not get harvested. Sweet potato planting starts within the next 3 weeks. Without those workers, we wouldn't get the sweet potatoes planted either, which means there's no reason to harvest them. That's a loss as well. It's also irrigation time, setting up our drip irrigation for our onions. And that's the largest single crop that we grow at about 1,100 acres. If we weren't able to put that irrigation in place, I don't know that we would lose the entire crop, because we would eventually get to it, but the damages would be significant. And it's that disruption in the supply chain. A lot of people have suggested, well, why not hire people temporarily, or why not hire, you know, domestic workers or whatnot? Well, there's several reasons not to, or not to be able to. And one is, as soon as we can get out of our homes and do our main job, our first job, we got to do that. So we can't not bring these folks from Mexico who are going to be working for us for the next 8 months or 9 months, under the illusion that someone that is normally a waiter in a restaurant is going to stay with me to finish my season and help us to finish harvesting that crop. So there's a lot of dynamics that come and play a role in who needs to be here and why we need them, and the work that they do.
And there's some skill too in what they're doing. It's not something you can develop in a very quick turnaround, right?
No, and probably one of the most complicated things, and it's odd, but picking asparagus takes some significant time to figure out how to do. You're sorting by size, by length, and trimming and pruning that field as you go through it. So yes, and that's not even one of the most complicated. I mean, I think if you get into the orchards working around these, you know, the apple and fruit industry, then you have even a higher skill set that's required.
Let's talk about the demand, the supply demand chain. Have you seen an increase in orders or demand for product?
It's been a dramatic shift, dramatic. This is my 14th season selling our onion crop. And I've never seen anything like it. There's no question. I missed 9/11. I have a salesman in the office, Chris Wu, who is with us during 9/11. And that's what he keeps comparing this to, is to 9/11. And the instant change in what the market pull and the consumer demands are. I mean, it's just sudden. We've gone from, typically on retail is about 40% of our business, and food service is the balance. It's exactly the opposite and probably even a little more. We're probably more like 70-80% retail and 20% food service. And food service represents, you know, everything that's going to restaurants and sporting arenas and schools and all of that kind of thing. So everything that's been affected.
Yeah, I think I saw a report the other day. I'm trying to think, it was a Farm Bureau put out, where our consumption habits have changed from cooking at home to a lot more eating outside the home. Only just recently has that changed, where we're actually consuming more food outside the home. And I would assume with this whole thing, it's just thrown that completely upside down.
Absolutely.
Can you increase productivity to account for those additional orders?
So yeah, it's kind of an interesting conversation to have, because it's not what we are right now that complicates the situation even more is in a transition from one part of the country as a growing region to another. The Northwest is finishing their onion season. So we're typically done here the second week of April. And then we transition to Southern California or to Texas. And we haven't been able to do that. There's delays in the supply chain, and California will be late coming in. So they're a week to 10 days, maybe 2 weeks late. The number of onions that we're crossing, so Mexico's in the same buying frenzy that we are here in the United States. So the volume in Mexico that typically is crossing through Texas into the southern states has been limited. So all of a sudden there is all of this extra demand, and there's really not the extra supply for it. It's not just that there's more demand, it's a supply situation as well. So you have two factors working against each other at the same time. So we've had to be very careful. We can ramp up, but if I ramp up, I will create a gap where there is no supply for our customers. And that's not just, you know, specific to us. That's going to be many, many different shippers in the Northwest, and marketing companies are going to have to be careful about how quickly they market what there is remaining until California is ready to go.
So would that be you taking it upon yourself to regulating what's going out and what orders you fill? I see you say the demand has increased. So do you have new customers coming to you trying to get your inventory and you're having to say, no, I can't. I've worked with these customers for so long and I need to fulfill the orders. Is that something you personally put on yourself and your company?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's always ebbs and flows in the market, always create these new customers that are market driven customers, as I would like to call them. And in a normal circumstance, this is what we pride ourselves on as a grower shipper, and someone who controls everything, you know, from start to finish, is like our sense of loyalty. If you'll be loyal to us, we'll be loyal to you. This is a more significant, broader circumstance where, maybe that doesn't come into play as much, but certainly the people that have been with us when the market was $4 and today is $10, we got to stick with the people that were helping us when nobody wanted our onions, right?
Is there something us consumers can do to make sure that we are purchasing the correct onions? You say that they're, you know, we could be getting onions from Mexico and some other regions. Is there something we can be doing to help the American farmer to make sure that there is a next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing in general is the overall idea and philosophy of whether or not the United States as a nation needs to produce its own food. I mean, that's a big question. So if you're going to do anything, it would be to ask for at retail, at the restaurant, for American onions or American grown produce. That's probably the most significant thing you can do because the regulations have been taken away. So I don't have to say where onions are coming from that I'm selling, which is unfortunate. And that should be there too. So it's really kind of two things. Ask for something that's American grown if you think that's important and we need to have that homegrown food supply and the infrastructure in place to do that. And number two, ask for the cool laws, the country of origin labeling, to be reinstated.
Explain that a little bit. I'm not sure all of our audience knows what those regulations are.
So the cool labeling came into effect, I'm not going to get the year right, but in the 2014, 2015. And what that was a country of origin labeling that was supposed to be on all food, all fresh food. It included vegetables and meats. Through some pretty significant lobbying efforts from the media industry, they actually had those removed because there's some complicated stuff that kind of could scare the consumer on the meat side of the deal. Unfortunately, when they got their part of the deal pulled out, it pulled all of the regulations off of the fruit vegetable industry at the same time. And that's just that. It's unfortunate that was removed because it would be valuable I feel like it's valuable no matter what, but I can't speak to what the argument was for, you know, the meat and the protein industry to have that removed in the first place, but they must've thought there was some reason to do it. But again, I think it's important for us to know where our foods come from, whether it's vegetables or meats or whatever it is.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the food chain. When it comes to planting, do you have the raw materials you need? Are you getting the seeds? Is there a risk of not having the supply that you need to plant the crops and to propagate those crops?
No, we've been supplied very well, and the supply chain has been consistent and constant. To speak of the risk in the supply chain, I really only feel like there's one significant risk, and that's frankly the transportation side. If for some reason our drivers started to get sick, I'm not sure, you know, under current restrictions, how you would ever replace those drivers. That's the most dangerous part. I think we can pack. I think we can plant. I think we can operate the farms, and I think we're safe because we're relatively segregated and have that social distancing. But the drivers are going from place to place to place through all the different locations. I have drivers today that will be going into Brooklyn, into New York, and they're very nervous. We have folks that are coming out of Seattle and going into the Portland area. I've got trucks going into Los Angeles where the city just got shut down, and you can understand the nerves and the consideration that these drivers have for their own health and how there's multiple ways that they could be the most challenging part of the supply chain.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times we take for granted that trucking industry and those individuals that are driving those trucks. At least here in the United States, if they shut down, we're paralyzed.
Yeah, and paralyzed immediately.
moving forward, this next year, is anything, are you changing any cultural practices? Are you changing any marketing, or is what's different? What's going to be different moving forward, having learned from this experience?
Yeah, I've been trying to find books about some about the recession. I don't want to say Great Depression at this point. I don't want to say anything about depression, but I've been trying to understand how those that have survived these, you know, ag is usually quite resilient in a recession, right? Everyone has to eat. But I have certainly tried to look at it and think, okay, what do I have to do moving forward? And one of the obvious things for us is we have to focus more on retail. Because if the restaurants, as the discretionary income goes away, number one, then more people are going to be eating at home, which means the consumption is not going to happen through a restaurant. It's going to be happening through either meal services like HelloFresh or something like that, or you're going to be going to the grocery store. And so that's going to be our focus. The question is that I always ask myself, and I'm asking myself right now, is with the restaurant industry in a difficult position and less in the picture than what it was a year ago, is consumption of our products that we grow actually down? Are people going to eat more onions because they're eating at home, or are they going to eat fewer onions because they're eating at home? Mm. Asparagus, where we have asparagus coming onto the market, asparagus is an expensive item. I'm willing to bet asparagus and avocados are two of the items, like when you're paying $1 per piece of fruit and income is tight, you're not going to be thinking about an avocado. And asparagus tends to be just as expensive, about $1.99 to $2.99 a pound. It's expensive. Are consumers going to be buying it? There's not a lot that we can do to change that, but it is something to be mindful of, because these luxury, non-staple fresh fruits and vegetables are going to take a hit, at least for the next couple of months, while we're all, you know, not able to go out and eat in a restaurant.
Is the pricing of the products that you produce, is that fluctuating right now as well?
Yeah. So when we had to do that, it almost as a method to keep from overselling, right? So we've gone, now be mindful of this. We were selling for a jumbo yellow 50 pounds for about $4 a bag, 10 days ago. That is $3 under cost of production. And that had been the market for 6 or 8 weeks. I mean, just bad, a bad position to be in. We're now at about $9 to $10 per 50 pound bag. So it puts us in the profitable range. But so yes, the answer, it's a really long winded answer to say, yes, the market, the prices have come up because the supply that was available is constant.
Moving forward, is that something you think that we need to evaluate and not quickly forget when times switch back to quote unquote normal? And I know that the organic market and some of these other markets, smaller niche markets, have really taken over. Is that something that we need to keep in mind when we can associate directly fertilizer directly to, you know, it's been documented that it's a sixfold since 2000 that we get that much higher yields. Is that something that we need to continue to keep in the forefront of our mind and our agriculture practices when we decide to make these personal switches, to not be bashing on other types of cultural practices that are trying to feed the entire world?
Yeah, no, I agree completely with you. And then on that comment, like I get more frustrated. I don't have any problem with organic production in general at all. I do have a really significant frustration with the way that organic is marketed and promoted. And that's a really good point, because their efficiency is important, and efficiency usually means less expensive, which means more value to the consumer. But ultimately, it's still the consumer that has to make that decision. The question is, did the marketer influence the consumer, or did the consumer influence the marketer? And what was the core? What was the why? Why did the consumer go the way that they did? Did they go that way because they really believed that, or because they were convinced that that was better?
Boy, we could do a whole podcast on that, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, there's opportunity in everything bad that happens. Is this a time that us in agriculture really need to step up and tell a story about, whether it be new varieties, possibly a GMO, or some sort of increasing shelf life, or, you know, some of these options that we do have? Is this the time that you think that, or is there a call to action that you have for all of us in the industry to really promote that this is what we've been preparing for? You know, this isn't that far out of our realm, having lived in agriculture our whole lives. This is something that has always been a part of us.
Yeah, I do think there's a call to action. I think there's another significant change that's going to take place in the market as well. But the call to action, and the thing that we need to talk about in agriculture, is what we do and how much we care about the consumer. So often there's this cliche, this saying, and I don't know why this even goes together other than phonetically it sounds good, but the rich farmer. No one talks about the rich software designer or the rich movie star or the rich anybody else, right? The rich stockbroker, it's all expected or assumed, whether it's right or not. But for some reason, this connotation with dollars and foods, it's a negative connection. As a farmer, because we're supplying a staple, there is something more significant, but I can't even come up with the right adjective, but there's something about it that makes the consumer doubt, if not the ethics of a farmer, at least the motivation of the farmer. And while economics play an important role in what we're doing, most of us are in an operation that's many generations, or at least a multi-generational operation in one way or another. I really care whether my kids have a place to come back to. So we make decisions, and when we make them, they're for 20 and 30 and 40 years at a time as a minimum. Like, if we're going to buy a farm, it's a 20-year commitment anyway. And so we're thinking way down the road. So can we tell people why they're thinking about where their food comes from and why they're worried about where their food comes from? Something that would resonate and stay with them. We have a chance right now, a cultural movement that could be so significant that we really could change their mindset. And what is that we can do? And I don't know what that is. I know that all farmers need to do a lot better job telling their story and the why of what they're doing. But that's a lot to ask. A lot of guys, we talk about social distancing, they're in a tractor all day, or they're out on the farm walking fields. They don't want to get on this camera and do this. It's uncomfortable. So what do we do? Do companies like yourselves need to be more involved in the process and help tell that story, because the farmers maybe aren't comfortable? Can you push the envelope a little bit? Can you push the issue a little bit so that story is told?
I think that's brilliantly stated. Brady and I met Shay at a recent national sales meeting where Shay was invited to come and talk to us. He was a keynote speaker, and he told us a little bit about his family farm, third generation family farm, and why it's so important that we, and when I say we, everybody that's listening to this podcast, we need to tell the story. We need the consumer to understand where their food comes from and why it's so important. And I think right now it's high on everyone's radar, because they go into a grocery store, like you said, Shay, and they don't see it, and they realize, hey, wait a minute, that these shelves aren't endless, and they don't magically produce their own food here. It's somebody that's actually doing this, and not just somebody, but a whole supply chain that is working hard to make sure that we have food on the table. Give us a little bit of background on you, Shay. Tell us a little bit about Hawaii Produce and how you got involved and came back to the farm.
Yeah, that's not a long story, but, and I'm not sure that interesting either, but I'll share this.
Hey, you're the one who said we need to tell the story. I'm asking you to tell the story.
Yeah, that's true. I never tell the story then.
Don't forget, you're only 2% of America, Shay.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I didn't know, I always grew up super proud of being a farm kid. Loved the idea of being a farm kid. didn't realize how few people understood what being a farmer really meant until I moved away. In my college years, especially, I started to realize that there was really there was a lack of understanding in two places. There was a lack of understanding from general Americans that are, you know, multiple generations removed from the farm. There's also a disconnect between the farmer, the true farmer, my grandfather is an example, between him and the rest of America. He knew what he wanted to do. He knew what he was doing and he was proud of what he was doing, but he didn't realize that most people have no clue about that. And he had created this business through his efforts, but he was a farmer. His mentality, and this is the farmers listening may or may not get where I come from here, but I'll throw it out there, because a farmer's worries generally end at harvest time. They get the job done and they work and toil and get everything harvested, get it in a bin, get it to market, and their worries are over. And they might worry about what the return is, but they don't have to worry about selling their crop. And the dynamic where I felt like I could come in and make a difference for our family and for our operation was in creating the value for the stuff once it was in a bin. And I could run the business side and the farming side. Farmers are phenomenal businessmen, but they still have so much work that the workload is so high. Once harvest is done, a lot of times they want to wipe their hands, step back, take a breath, and just relax for a while. And that's really what pulled me back. I wanted to, I saw the legacy, I saw what was created, but I wanted to come back and be able to see our family's onions, which had never been at retail before. I wanted to go to the grocery store and see our onions and our label there. And I wanted to go to a restaurant and see the menu and know that that was our stuff and still have that connection that much farther. So I went to college, I got there, I saw that there was a legacy that was created. I thought I could contribute. And I think it's important that we all feel like we can contribute. And I came back and I was allowed to make tons of mistakes, lots of mistakes. We started our packing operation in 2007. I think the second year I cost us $250,000 and lost sales because we sold to people that we shouldn't have. We were desperate to sell. And there's a lesson to be learned there too. You have to let the second and the third and the fourth generation, the people that return back to your farm, you have to let them make mistakes. Maybe not that kind of mistake, but mistakes. You know, not that significant, right? We can, 50,000 might be enough, or 20 or whatever your number is. You don't have to, yeah, I'm not saying it has to be that kind of number, but, and if you let them do that, then I have ownership in this business and it's part of my heritage and who I am. And it's something to really be proud of. For me, I have that sense of pride. And so that's, I guess, ultimately how I ended up here. I wanted to be like in business and I wanted to be entrepreneurial, but I'm not a very good farmer. So, while I see farmers in one light and I grew up a farm kid and I understand both sides of the business in a unique way. If you ask my cousin, who's one of the farm managers, and my uncle, who's another farm manager, if they want me on the farm, they will shake their head no.
go back into your office and put on your marketing hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you do another video or podcast, Shay. That's fine. Just don't run the planner. I don't want to see what the results will be.
the rows are a little crooked when you run the tractor.
Yeah. I mean, it's GPS. That tells you how bad I am when it's the tractor's driving itself and I can still make them crooked.
Well, Shay, thank you very much for shedding some light on your situation and helping us understand a little bit more about the whole food chain and especially how it's being affected by this pandemic and how we can be a better steward, tell our stories, tell our neighbors, help educate. Hopefully we can be better stewards of our resources. So thank you very much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey, we hope that as you're listening to this, that it helped raise your knowledge a little bit. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can go to just Google Yara Podcast. It'll take you to our podcast page. You can make comments or suggestions. And we hope you have a good week.
You've been listening to the Yara Crop Nutrition Podcast. For more information about our company, please visit us at www.yara.com or yara.us, or for Canada, yaracanada.ca.